is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
So the next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Not quite happy hour. Doing this before class on campus. So of course, if any of the campus officials are asking, there is no alcohol present. I'm here with a fellow student and a professor, and I want them to introduce themselves because they were also on the Costa Rica trip, the service learning project. And there's a reason, there's a method to the madness of what this episode is about, and I hope you stick around to figure out what that is. So first, I want my classmate, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Shannon. I am a third year student at Marymount, and I am very excited to be here.
Thank you for being here. That wasn't awkward at all. Be natural.
I'm super awkward.
You're not awkward. That's why. That's the funny part is she's not awkward at all. All right, and now to the faculty member present.
I'm Kelly Negley, and I'm one of the faculty members that went on the Costa Rica trip, and I have been at Marymount for a long time, and I'm really excited to be here.
So how was the trip overall? Because, Kelly, you were a student here at Marymount, but this trip didn't exist when you went to school here. I thought it did, but this was your first experience with it, but you have also been teaching here as long as I've been going to school. So you've been hearing about it kind of like how I did. I heard about it from a class 2 years ahead of me, a class 1 year ahead of me, and now it was my turn to go. And you were kind of thrust into it, maybe a little bit unfairly, because I can just go and be an observer. I'm a student. I can play that student card where, oh, I don't know, I'm a student, I'm just going to wing it. You had to go and be in charge of us in a foreign country in a situation that you've kind of only heard of. So how was that?
It was great, actually. It was really nice to sort of bond with you guys. You've come so far since I taught you 3 years ago, and it was really nice to look at you more like you're my colleagues now, rather than really being students. So that was great to see from my perspective. Certainly there were challenging times, but I think we got through them all together, and it was a really enjoyable experience for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's organization to it. We had a structure of what we were going to do, but then of course, like any really good made plans, they go out the window the minute you wake up. So I want to talk a little bit about what we were doing and how you were pretty good at guiding us, because this is like your wheelhouse. What was kind of our purpose for the first 4 or 5 days at Manos, which was the team that you and I were on? What were we doing there for the residents? What was our purpose?
So our purpose was to go through and evaluate the wheelchair and mobility equipment that these residents had. A lot of them had received some newer wheelchairs around January, but they were not fitted well to them at all. And then there were, of course, several people who have been in wheelchairs that were donated, that were falling apart, not the right size, didn't have a cushion. Our job was to come in and take a look at what was going on, and then also to evaluate them and figure out what we could do to make their seating and positioning and mobility situation a little bit better. There was going to be some money maybe coming in from the state that was going to be able to supply some new wheelchairs for these residents in the facility. So we're hopeful that all of the hard work will not be in vain, but at the moment, we're really working hard on getting a lot of money raised so that we can get one particular resident a power wheelchair, and all the other residents are getting more manual wheelchairs, but this particular resident really needs power mobility to have a better quality of life.
We're going to get to specifically that resident, G, who we've been talking about on Twitter and social media, but it was an interesting start to the trip, because if you're going to do a wheelchair evaluation, you've got to put your hands on the patient, and I know we know that, but when you're in a situation like we were in a foreign country in a long-term care facility with some of the types of disabilities we were looking at, our first day was kind of like, oh, you want me to I have to be a PT now. I have to touch, because again, we're in a foreign situation. But that was good because it was a target to look at. It wasn't just create a treatment session. It was you have to do this specific task. So it was like, okay, I have a plan. I need to get these 10 measurements, and here's how I get those measurements. I need to move the patient around. So it was kind of good in a way because it gave us something to actually know we had to do, even though we had, I mean, myself, I had done a wheelchair eval twice, and both of them weren't classmates, and both of them were in labs. So it was like, oh, the stuff in lab. We're supposed to remember that, aren't we? Why were wheelchair evaluations, why are they kind of easier to you?
Well, I've been doing wheelchair evaluations now for probably almost 5 years. I started as a clinician at the National Rehab Hospital in Washington, D.C., and as soon as I started, my supervisor asked me if I was interested in participating in seating and mobility evaluations, and I jumped right in on the chance to do that because I thought that would be really a great experience for me clinically and help me develop my skills as a new clinician, as a new grad. So I owe so much of what I know to all of the clinical staff at NRH and then all of the wheelchair vendors that I've worked with in the past 5 years. So for me, this is sort of like second nature. I do 2 seating and mobility evaluations a week. Each one takes about 2 hours, and we get anything from someone who's really easy to someone that has a very complex medical history and diagnosis. So I was very comfortable with everything we saw in Costa Rica because that could be easily something that I see at NRH.
Yeah, you were like our secret, weapon. Because like I said, I've done 2 wheelchair evals, and they were on classmates, and it's really hard to fake having some of these, you know, fixed issues or flexible issues, especially once you're classmate. Because, you know, I remember doing one of my roommates, and he was kind of trying to be nice about it. I'm like, no, you're supposed to act like, you know, a patient who really, really needs this. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Seeing it live in person was a lot easier when you could ask someone who's done it a question about exactly what am I measuring again? Or what do you think this would need? Because seeing, you know, somebody who's completely inverted in person, I have no idea what to put their feet on, what would be best. So having someone there was a cool experience, was a good ace in the hole. So that's what we did for our first week.
And you guys did a great job, too. That's not an easy thing to do. I think we did 37 wheelchair evaluations in about 4 days with a team of 10 people. That's a lot of wheelchair evaluations. And the documentation that comes along with all those wheelchair evaluations is very extensive. And you guys did a beautiful job at doing that. And then also having to translate it into Spanish. That was not an easy task.
Speak much Spanish, but we'll see what happens when someone tries to read my letter of medical necessity from broken English to broken Spanish. All right, so now I'm going to jump a little bit. So now we just talked about how we did wheelchair evals for the first week, and that was our purpose. But as an entire class, broken up into 4 different groups. And Shannon, which group were you in?
I was in the Santiago Crespo group, which was a facility that was very comparable to a skilled nursing facility here in the States. Our main goal was to get all of the residents there that were appropriate up and ambulating, because they spend the majority of their time restrained in their chairs because of lack of manpower to do walking activities.
How'd that go?
It was wonderful.
Any moments that are going to make you, you know, make sure you tell mom and dad, make them giggle?
It was very surprising. Most people in Costa Rica, they learn English while they're in grade school. The age population that I was with was primarily 70 and older. And so I thought maybe some of them would have retained a little bit of English, but I was actually surprised how many would just jump into saying something in English mid-treatment session.
Really?
And would surprise me. And I said, you've been holding out on me. You spoke English this whole time. But it was comparable to the amount of Spanish that I spoke, so we didn't get very far with what we knew from each other's language.
Yeah, I had to use a lot of body language. I would introduce myself by saying, mi amo es Jimmy, mi hablo Spanish. And that pretty much translates universally. And this way they just knew that what page I was on. Like, look, I don't speak Spanish well, but the physical part of physical therapy, you can kind of fudge it with body language.
There was a lot of smiling and nodding. Our translator the very first day said that a smile is universal and that everybody can understand what that means. So that was a good go-to.
It kind of makes you feel a little bit better. I mean, just if I can get through an evaluation and a treatment session without speaking the language.
Oh, yeah.
Of the patient, it makes you a little more confident.
I'm in a skilled nursing facility for my final clinical rotation, and I'm really looking forward to it because of the connections that I made with the patients in the past few weeks when we were in Costa Rica were remarkable. So I can only imagine what they'll be like when we can share the same language and I can truly hear their stories, not just through a translator.
Well, so you were on a different team, but the facility that I was at, Manos Abiertos, was kind of like the main site. That was the site that we all went to on our first day, and we were all paired up a particular resident to kind of make a connection because we were eventually going to take them off site. We took them to a pool for a day. We took them to a movie theater for a day. So we all were kind of paired up with particular residents. And I want you to talk a little about who you were paired up with.
So that first day when we went and we were walking around all the different houses at Manos Abiertos and everybody was finding their resident.
What do you mean by houses? Because I brought this up before, but I want to paint a picture.
They are their homes. Mm-hmm. They are buildings where multiple residents live. Some live in the same room. There's a few room or a few beds per room. And
almost
this
like,
is
almost like a dorm. A couple, there's like three dorms.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the caregivers stay, and they do all of their daily routines, dressing, bathing, toileting. They all eat together at a communal table. Then there's some areas outside of those houses, dorm rooms, that they can go outside and spend some time outdoors.
Yeah, it's just like having a large communal kind of house. So there were three of them on this site. I had dubbed them the frat house, the sorority house, and then the apartment complex, because the third was very, very large and mixed. And your resident was living where?
I would suppose that he would be in the frat house.
I mean, it's a large house. It's all guys. And there's a front lawn with a trampoline on it. That's a frat house.
And now cornhole.
And now cornhole.
Yes, and now there's a cornhole. So I can actually vividly remember walking into the frat house and seeing this gentleman sitting in a chair, and he lit up the entire room. He was so excited to see us, and he didn't know who would be his lucky contender that would be his partner for the week, and it got to be me. And so I'm looking around, and I said, "Does anybody know who G is? Does anybody know who G is?" And there ended up being two Gs with the same name, both very different. And I had the opportunity to work with G, who we are doing this wheelchair mission for. So when I first spoke with him, the majority of the males that stayed in that home had some type of mental disability. Either they were verbal and not completely coherent, or they were totally nonverbal. So to my surprise, when I met G, he was completely mentally intact. He had a 1,000-watt smile, and he started speaking a mile a minute in Spanish to me, and I was like, oh no. I said, oh no, I would get the one resident that can completely communicate with me, and I am one of the weakest in the Spanish department. But it ended up working out really well. Our first day, La Liga is the local soccer team in Alajuela, Costa Rica. Sí, football. And they had a game on that day. So I tried to get G to come outside and hang out with me, and he was having no part in it because we were watching pregame for the football game. So our first day consisted of watching about 3 hours of soccer together.
So you say his 1,000-watt smile, but he speaks English pretty well.
He does. I called him mi profesor because he taught me a lot of Spanish just in the first day that we spent together. And then much to his surprise, when I came back a week later after spending a week at Santiago, my Spanish had improved tremendously. So he was very pleasantly surprised.
So you talked a little bit about his cognitive status. So what else would you tell someone if you were going to describe G?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not really sure that G has a definitive diagnosis. He obviously has muscular dystrophy, but we weren't sure if it was a particular kind or Duchenne's that is common among males his age.
Just to be clear and make sure everybody gets why Shannon is questioning this, we don't get a lot of information besides the patient's name. I mean, even in terms of age or definitely not diagnosis, there are records, but we didn't necessarily have access to all of them.
He definitely does have muscular dystrophy. He is an 18-year-old gentleman. He has neck control, and he has a little bit of bilateral hand movement, and he also has a little bit of lower extremity movement, but it's difficult because he's usually in the anti-gravity position. But he has no trunk control. He does not have any upper extremity movement above the wrists and fingers. And he still seems to keep the brightest of spirits about him.
Yeah. So right now he's sitting in what?
He is sitting in a wheelchair that was given to him by our program 4 or 5 years ago, and he has developed really severe contractures in both of his feet. He has fixed
inversion.
Yeah, completely inversion. You can see the bottom of the soles of his feet while he's sitting. Those aren't flexible anymore. They are fixed. It's a bony deformation.
So he's in a manual tilt and space.
Mm-hmm.
So of course he doesn't have shoulder function, doesn't have elbow function. So, you know, a manual wheelchair is not appropriate for him. So he's in a chair that is appropriate for him, except he's completely passive now.
Right.
You know, exploring, you know, his environment is not an option. He needs to be pushed. If he would like to turn 90 degrees to watch a football game, he needs to, he's completely dependent on transfers. He's in a wheelchair that's appropriate. It fits him, but it doesn't fit an 18-year-old patient who wants to get out there and mix it up with his friends.
Exactly. He does have very limited cervical rotation, so even though he can hold his head upright, he doesn't have the ability to turn. So essentially where his chair is located is exactly what he sees. Right. He doesn't have the ability to move either his head nor the chair himself, so he has to verbally ask for help to be repositioned if he does want a change of scenery or if he would like to go anywhere else.
Right. We've said this before on past episodes, that the care there, it's great, but there's a lot of residents, so they can't just spend all their time with him and making sure that he's where he wants to be every minute of the day. So that's where we kind of saw a need in terms of what would, I mean, we don't want to just throw money at a problem. I mean, we could, right, we could drop $1 million in this place and have some great improvements. If we were going to effectively use money, his receiving a power chair would be the best use of any funds donated, because it would significantly change his day, his minute-to-minute existence.
Completely agree. It would change his quality of life, as well as helping the caregivers to be able to care for the other residents, in the sense that, just like you said, his wants are wants, whereas many of the other residents have needs that need to be attended to immediately, and they, I think the caregivers know that G is very independent in the sense that he's able to tell them exactly what he needs, and if what he's requesting is not a need, it's just a desire, I think it goes by the wayside occasionally.
So I knew when we were going through wheelchair seating in neuro rehab that power chairs are expensive. We did a exercise where we priced out a manual wheelchair for ourselves and how much that would even cost. And then we went to, you know, the BMWs and the Cadillacs in terms of you buying a power chair. It's like buying a small car, or maybe not even a small car. So, Kelly, you helped me go through an order form for a power chair. And what was the ballpark figure for a chair that, and we weren't putting spinning rims and gold plating on this thing. What was the ballpark figure for a chair that would suit G's needs?
So I believe we came up with a chair that was going to cost about $18,000. And that was a chair that was going to have pretty good power, mobility, and seating functions on it. So power chair that had decent motors and also had the power tilt function so that he could perform pressure reliefs independently and take rest periods as he wanted to independently. And then it also had good positioning and pressure relieving cushion as well as a little bit of extra trunk support. But outside of that, it didn't have any other fancy bells or whistles.
And that's not counting shipping. That's not counting any maintenance that might need to occur for the chair. $18,000, but you could go a lot higher than that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could have gotten him a chair that would be equivalent to maybe $30,000. That would be fantastic for him to have a chair that had a lot more seating functions on it, but that's not really, really what he needs. What he needs is power mobility in terms of going from point A to point B, and also power tilt so that he can independently relieve pressure and reposition himself and take rest periods as he wants to.
Yeah. So when we were ordering this, I wanted to make sure we weren't just getting the bare minimum. I wanted him to get what he needed. I also wasn't, you know, I wanted to make sure we could hit this fundraising goal, and I didn't want him to have stuff he didn't necessarily need, because the more stuff you put on there, the more stuff that could break, right? I mean, that's one thing I wasn't thinking about. You do this, so you're saying, well, the more things we have on there, the more opportunity there is for mechanical failure, and he's in Costa Rica, so how's that going to get fixed once we put him in the chair?
Exactly. So we were going for something that was going to be a happy medium between what does he really need positioning wise and mobility wise, and what's feasible for him to really realistically use this device safely and also to have a better quality of life with it.
Yeah. What I wanted to make sure we got done is what would he need to change his minute to minute existence, like I said before. And if you're going to put together a fundraiser, you might as well make sure that you get what he's going to need, what he can actually use. So the goal is $18,000. We're doing the fundraising in a variety of ways. Of course, people are familiar with Kickstarter campaigns or GoFundMe pages. We've got a GoFundMe page up right now. You can check out the link online at ptpinecast.com. We've got a professor from Duke University, Mike Ryman. He just came out with an orthopedic clinical advisor book. It is brand new. He gave me a copy to check out, and it's fantastic. He's also put the word out that anybody who donates a dollar or up has a chance to win a free copy of the book. He's going to cover shipping and everything, so he's going to throw out a book there. So students or clinicians who want an orthopedic manual to have on the shelf there. And we've got some brand new news that I get to tell you guys about right now. We've got four continuing education courses that have been donated 100% free of charge. First is a dry needling course from Kineticore. So anywhere Kineticore will hold a course, they are letting me auction off a seat in one of their courses. Strong First, which is a kettlebell instruction corporation, they have given me a couple of different seats at some of their locations. So we're going to post those locations. Those courses usually run about $1,500 to $1,600, and they've given me two of them free of charge. Justin Dunaway from another organization that goes around the world and tries to bring PT stand for Haiti. He's got a spinal manipulation course in Oregon and Pittsburgh. He's offered a seat in one of those. And Sarah Haig and Sandy Hilton at Entropy Physical Therapy in Chicago have courses at their PT clinic regularly. Jerry Durham and Jeff Moore are going to be out there in just a couple of months, and they're going to be doing a low back pain course and have given me very graciously a seat in that course as well. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a silent auction on the website, ptpinecast.com. We'll let you know what the course entails, when it is, where it is. If you'd like to go, you send me your highest bid, and highest bid is going to get it. So silent auction online at ptpinecast.com, and that's just the four courses and the book that we found in the first week of asking people to help out. Adam Meekins from the UK has also offered up a spot in one of his shoulder courses as well. We're just going to get the details on that. He just came through with that early this morning or mid-afternoon in UK time. I'm not really sure what time it is there either. So that's the different ways people can help out. Also, spreading the word. I mean, just sharing this. Some people will say, you don't have much money to give. A dollar, $5 will go a long way. I said this before. I'd rather have 18,000 people give me a dollar than sit around and wait for one $18,000 check. I just think, you know, the power to the person has a better opportunity to actually to get this chair into fruition than it would be to sit around and wait for, you know, some company to write me a check.
So the other thing that's been great news is that the Permobil company has been gracious enough to work with us on this effort. We have been in touch through some of my connections with the rep for Costa Rica for Permobil. And so for those of you who don't know, Permobil is a wheelchair company. They manufacture both power chairs and manual wheelchairs. They're known for their excellence with their power chairs. They last a very, very long time. We sort of call them the BMW of power chairs because they're just so well made. They're great chairs. So we are working with them to try to get the wheelchair at a significantly reduced cost. They are also going to be able to help us deliver the chair to G and teach him how to use it and cover the cost of shipping and all that stuff that can be a little bit complicated when it comes to getting this type of mobility equipment in a country like Costa Rica.
Something you had brought up earlier was we need someone to show him how to use it. And I guess I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. This is a pretty complex piece of equipment. I want to make sure he's using it right. And the maintenance is going to stay on. He's going to keep it for as long as he can. And I was like, oh, yeah, having somebody there to show him how to actually use it would probably be a good idea. And with Permobil, we'd have that option.
And it also seems like with that option, Diana Venskis, who is sort of the founder of this trip and has developed all of these connections for Marymount down in Costa Rica, she's probably going to be able to go down there and also help with the setup and safety and teaching him how to use it and also teaching his caregivers how to use it so that if they need to help him with it, they can.
Yeah, they're the ones getting him in and out of that chair. They're going to be the ones responsible for charging it and adjusting it. We want to make sure they're doing that right so that any of the donations that we receive that eventually purchase this chair, get this chair, they go as far as they can. We want to make sure every dollar that we get is going absolutely as far as we can for this chair. So I'm pretty excited. Before I left, you know, I wrote this on the GoFundMe page when it explains what the fundraiser is about. Before I left, I was already kind of thinking about this before our last day, and I'm not a terribly emotional person. But I remember, you know, getting a little choked up and just saying to him, I didn't want to promise him anything because I just said, I want to send you something in my head. I want to make sure we get him some DVDs and stuff like that. I talked about liking the Fast and the Furious series. So, you know, good quality American movies making their way around the world. But, you know, he's 18, so of course he's going to like the Vin Diesel. But I wanted to make sure he knew that there were some people out there who were going to be standing up for him, you know. And making sure that there were some people who were going to be doing some work and bringing him something he needs. So why should he get this chair?
G deserves a power chair for many, many reasons. But really, he just, the energy and the excitement that he gives off in the situation that he's in, he truly has made the most of it. I know that he feels very grateful for his caretakers and the sisters that are taking care of him at Manos Abiertos. I think he knows that he's having a much better life because of them. But I also know that he could have an even better life if he had the independence to move about freely on his own free will. I mean, he's an 18-year-old guy, like Jimmy said. He is into the normal things that an 18-year-old would be into if he was mobile or not. And I think giving him that option to be mobile and to go about the grounds of Manos on the touch of his fingers on that chair would be unbelievable to him. Completely change his life for the better, and he really does. He just truly deserves it.
Yeah. Same question, Kelly, because you got a chance to work with him for essentially 2 weeks as well.
Yeah. He deserves this chair because he is the shining star there. He means so much not only to the caretakers, but also to the other residents there. And he would also have the opportunity, like it was mentioned earlier, to help the caretakers take care of the other residents if he were to receive this power chair, because he has the intellectual ability to communicate with them, to understand if they need help, to help other residents if they need help. But right now he's limited to his mobility, and nobody should be limited in what they can do and how they can live their life because they can't get from point A to point B independently if they can.
It shouldn't be a reason for him to get the chair, but he does. He has it. You know, whatever it is, when other residents walk in the room and he's there, they just kind of, they light up and they get excited. He is in a situation where he is completely dependent and he knows it, and it never slows him down. So while we were out in Costa Rica, had to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to get there by 8, it was really early. It's really hard to bitch when you can move however you want. So seeing someone like that, seeing how G just approaches his day, just super happy to be there and just super happy you're spending 5 minutes with him, sets your day up differently. It puts it into perspective. My parting shot of why he deserves a chair, because it would change his world and because he never even asked for it, because he's not complaining about where he is and what he's got. He's super happy about it. But we know that there's something out there that exists that we can bring to him simply just by connecting a bunch of different people and getting some money together and sending him this piece of technology that will change his life. That's a reason that we should do it, is because we can do it. So on that, before I start crying before class, I will end this episode and just let you guys know, ptpinecast.com. is the link for the GoFundMe page. We've also got it all over Twitter at PG Pinecast. And we will bring you an update when we get enough money to buy this chair and send it down to Costa Rica. I definitely want to do that. So thank you guys very much for sharing the whys and the whos of G's Power Chair.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.